You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Ka. In this episode, we will go over the latest news and notes around baseball, recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, including Shohei Ohtani making history, Heliot Ramos making a splash, and the disappointment of Reed Detmers. And of course, we will give some streamer recommendations at the end of the show for the final week of fantasy baseball. But before we do all of that, John, what's going on with you? Are you still alive in any fantasy baseball leagues? Are any going on for you? What's the deal with that?
I technically have my Roto Dynasty League still going. I am not in contention for any monetary rewards, though, for the year. So,
okay.
Not really paying too much attention to any of my leagues at this point. I mean, with my Roto League, if you finish, it's a 14-teamer, so top seven get paid. But if you finish in eighth, you get the best odds for next year's first-year player draft.
Okay.
So I'm on the eighth, ninth bubble right now. So I guess there's still something to technically compete for. I'm not really competing in any fantasy leagues for any significant prizes at this point.
Yeah, so for me, I am in the midst of two leagues on Yahoo, which one is my home league, of course, and then the other is a pitcherless league that you and I were both in. It was a head-to-head winter league. It was something that I was excited to be a part of. There was a lot of good managers in there, a lot of good fantasy writers in there, so I was excited to compete in that. And I'm actually in the finals in both. I made it through the semis in my home league. It was a really close battle. It came down to the last day, and I ended up pulling through thanks to Riley Green hitting two home runs, which we will talk about in a little bit. But that was really exciting, so I was happy to make it to the championship in my home league, which I'm competing for my second straight title, which is really cool. And then I'm also in the pitcherless league where I made the finals, and it was really crazy because my opponent and I in the semis in that league, we were tied in, I think, five different categories going into Sunday. So that is just bonkers. I was not expecting to win that, but thanks to Shohei Ohtani, he scored a run, and I tied runs with him, which put me up 4-3-3, which means we had four wins, three losses in categories, and three ties in categories. So I ended up getting the edge. Just insane. And then this week, my God, we will talk about it a little bit later, but Shohei Ohtani might be carrying me to a championship in that league. In my home league, however, it's going to be a little bit of a battle. I'm down 6-3, and we're tied in one. I need to outright win more points than him because he has the higher seed advantage. If we tie, my opponent would win. So I'm really hoping to have a huge weekend because I'm down like 11 runs, 2 home runs, and 10 RBI, which is a lot. So I feel confident that we can make a comeback, but I haven't beat him a single day. He just keeps having a better day than I do. And I'm having great fantasy days. He's just having even better ones. And sometime that happens, and hopefully I can just have a better weekend because it would be great to win both of these leagues. I really hope so. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for the best, but it's going to be a battle for sure.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough prospect when you know there's not much you can do to your team to make it better. You're just facing a better opponent.
Yeah. That's the hard part about it, too. It's like, man, as a manager, I couldn't have done anything really differently. Like, my team is my team, right? Like, in a head-to-head league, when you go into the championship, you basically are rolling the dice. I mean, it's awesome, and it's a super successful season when you make it to the championship, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a successful season. I can put my hat up and hold it high and be very happy that I made it to the point that I wanted to. The season was all to get to this point. And then whatever happens will happen. And I was actually set up for success because I had 5 2-start pitchers. I was all ready to go. My offense was packed. Everyone was healthy. Like, I feel really good about my team and this scenario, but his offense is just popping off, and there's nothing I can do about that. Like, we only get 5 pickups per week, and it's not like I could have picked up someone that would have saved my season or would have drastically changed things. I'm using my pickups as I need to, and it's just tough, man. Sometimes it's not your time. So I'm just hoping, like I said, I have one big weekend over my opponent. And if I do, then I'm looking at back-to-back championships. If not, I'm looking at second place, and that's not too bad. So I'm hoping that it goes my way, but sometimes it doesn't, and you just got to accept it. But I'm still holding out hope, because that's just me as a person. I am very hopelessly optimistic, and I'm just hoping for the best here. So I will cross my fingers. I hope all of you listeners do too, for me as well. And before we get into the rest of the show, we just want to remind you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of the big ones, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, big or small. Make sure you follow us, and please, if you have the time, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It helps us out greatly, especially if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Those 5-star reviews add up. So please give us the time of day and leave a 5-star review. We would appreciate it greatly. Now let's move on to the news from this past week. Not the biggest list, and honestly some pretty good news involved in here. So let's get right into it. We will start with Kodai Senga, who could rejoin the Mets next week. The Mets said that they could use Senga out of the bullpen to facilitate a quicker return to the team. He'll pitch one inning for AAA Syracuse this weekend, and then we'll have an idea of if Senga is ready and what his role will be going forward. He's been out with a high-grade left calf strain. Francisco Lindor of the Mets has missed 4 straight games due to a sore back. An MRI came back clean, and there's a chance that Lindor returns to the lineup this weekend against the Phillies, where we need him desperately. So, Lindor, please come back. I mean, we've been winning, so it's not too bad, but we definitely would benefit from Lindor being in the lineup. So, Lindor, come back soon. And then we have Luis Angel Acuña, who was called up by the Mets to handle the job at shortstop while Lindor is out, and he's been doing quite well, which we will talk about a little bit later in the show. Ozzie Albies of the Braves will be activated from the 10-day IL on Friday. He's been out with a fractured left hand, and he's missed a lot of this season, so it'll probably be a nice time for all of the Ozzie Albies rosterers to see him back in the lineup for the rest of the season, albeit pretty short amount of time. So hopefully Albies can give you a little bit of damage in the lineup while he's active. Next, we have Victor Robles of the Mariners, who was scratched from Thursday's lineup. He missed Wednesday's game after injuring his hand trying to steal home on Tuesday, so consider him day-to-day for now. He's been in and out of the lineup recently with this hand injury after he got hit by a pitch on his hand, and then obviously trying to steal home, he got thrown out, which, by the way, was just a ridiculous move. John, did you happen to see that game or that scenario that happened?
I know that he tried to steal home, but I didn't watch the clip.
Yeah, so what happened was the bases were loaded and Robles was on third.
Yeah.
And Luis Gil had a 3-0 count on Justin Turner. And Robles thought it was a good idea to steal home. He was properly thrown out and did not score and pretty much costed his team a free run. I mean, literally, Luis Gil had no command and he just walked like the last two guys. And on a 3-0 count, you decide to steal home. Just a bonehead running mistake there. I mean, what are you doing? But regardless, I just wanted to bring that up. That's just so stupid. But Robles has been great on the base path. So, hey, whatever happens, happens. Next, we have Bobby Miller of the Dodgers, who was sent to AAA yet again. He gave up 17 runs in 11.1 innings pitched this month, taking his ERA to 8.52, and he has probably been one of the biggest disappointments of the 2024 fantasy baseball season. Matt Chapman of the Giants was placed on the paternity leave list. He should be back on Saturday. Dalton Varsho of the Blue Jays was placed on the 10-day IL on Tuesday, retroactive to September 14th, with a right shoulder strain. He will undergo shoulder surgery and could miss some time in 2025. Paul Sewald of the Diamondbacks was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday with left neck discomfort. Gabriel Moreno of the Diamondbacks was activated from the 10-day IL on Sunday. He missed nearly all of August and the first half of September with an adductor strain. And then last but not least, Jeffrey Springs and Pete Fairbanks of the Rays will both be shut down for the rest of the season. But that wraps up all of the news and notes from this past week. John, anything to add to this list?
Yeah, I mean, not too much. Obviously, a bunch of these guys who are getting on IL, you just won't see anymore. So feel free to drop them from your teams. Albie's coming back is pretty huge, but he's also kind of not been too good this entire season. So it's even questionable whether he's worth starting at second base for, you know, in the finals, in the championship. So a lot of these kind of matter more for roto leagues at this point. I think with, you know, if you're in a head-to-head, like your lineup is pretty set. So while it would be nice to see if, you know, let's just say Lindor comes back or something like that, it's probably not going to end up helping your team that much, because either his absence kicked you out of the playoffs or you found someone good enough to replace him in the time between when he got injured and when you were able to get into the finals.
Yeah, it's a tough time around this period of the season, because once someone gets hurt for a week, it's pretty much a season-ending surgery. Yeah. So basically what happens there is you, like you said, get a replacement and hopefully they fill in well. And if not, then it'll be good to have Lindor back. Like, Lindor has been amazing for everyone's team. Mm-hmm. So if he's healthy and in the lineup, then obviously you're going to start him. But like you mentioned, these are mainly for roto leagues now. Head-to-head leagues is kind of chalked. You have three more days left, pretty much, unless you have another week to go, which I think a lot of fantasy leagues try to avoid doing it to the very end of the season, because a lot of people rest players, and right, it can be very messy. So this is generally, usually, everyone's last week of the season. So, you know, maybe you get three games out of Lindor, and it can make a difference, of course. Mm-hmm. If he comes back, hits two home runs in a game, steals two bases, then yeah, obviously it's going to make a difference. But some of these guys, it's not really going to matter. Like when Matt Chapman, for instance, comes back on Saturday or Sunday, is he really going to make much of a difference from the guy that you picked up to replace him? Not really. So that's where it kind of gets nitty gritty there. So yeah, it's just a shame to see some of these guys getting hurt. It's great to have some of these guys coming back. Like you said, Ozzie Albies, he wasn't great this season, but hey, any production that he gives you in roto leagues from this point on is just a bonus, because you weren't expecting anything after he got hurt. So it's good to see him coming back. But that is it for the news from this past week. And before we get into the player performances from this past week, we are going to take our first break, and we'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to get into the weekly player performances from this past week. We are going to start with the weekend, Friday to Sunday, which is September 13th to September 15th. John, who performed well over the weekend?
Yeah, we are going to start out with Trevor Story of the Red Sox. 2-for-4 with a homer, run, and 2 RBI. That's right, guys. He is back. He's alive after a 5-month hiatus. Story has shown that maybe he's not completely cooked. This was his first homer of the season, and he tacked on another one on Wednesday as well. He's showing off the speed as well, as through 10 games, he's got 4 stolen bases. This, of course, doesn't really help you in the finals of your leagues, just like we were just talking about. Maybe you have an open spot in your roto leagues, and Story coming off IL is, you know, maybe he fits right into that spot. I think obviously this is more important for how we look at Story in 2025. I'm not sure where he's going to go in drafts. My gut says he's going to be kind of in the 15th round or something like that, just because of his injury history. But you know, if he's going in the second half of drafts, Story still could provide like a 15-50 season, maybe even 2021 if he's like completely healthy. He still has the speed. He still has the power. He plays in Boston. He's just not going to be I don't think he's going to be drafted as a top 10 shortstop. But if you're able to get him, I think he'd provide a lot of value in those later rounds if he somehow falls that far. One shortstop that's getting a lot of hype, though, is Willy Adames of the Milwaukee Brewers. Went 3-for-3 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 5 RBI on Saturday. He might be the most underrated shortstop in fantasy baseball. Based on roto rankings, Adames is the 5th best shortstop, but he was also getting drafted in that 14-15 round range, as opposed to other guys like Lindor or Gunnar Henderson. Among National League batters, Adames is just behind Shohei Ohtani in RBI. He leads all National League shortstops in homers. He's also no slouch in the speed department either, with 18 on the season. Adames is going to be a free agent next year, so depending on where he lands, that might affect where he goes in drafts. Milwaukee was a really hot offense through all of the season, so obviously Adames kind of benefited from that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he still goes within the first three rounds. I know that seems kind of high for a guy who was going in kind of the 15th just this year before, but he's played his way into being one of the better shortstops in the league. And then finally, Riley Green of the Detroit Tigers went 2-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 3 RBI on Sunday. Last week, I talked about Kerry Carpenter and Trey Sweeney, who are really helping the Tigers surge towards a playoff spot, much to my chagrin as a Twins fan. But the real hero has been Riley Green, who's really looked like an all-star level player that we were hoping he could be when he came up to the majors a couple years ago. Both these homers were off lefties, which is pretty impressive as a lefty himself, and he helped the Tigers overcome the faltering Orioles. On the season, Green has an OPS of 842. He's got 24 homers, 77 runs, and 71 RBI. If you look at Roto rankings, he's the 20th best outfielder. I think being in that outfielder 2 spot is really solid for Green. I don't know if he's going to get to outfielder 1 status by the end of next year, but he's definitely trending upwards, and that's a really good thing to see for not just fantasy managers, but also the Tigers, obviously, seeing all this young talent finally turn into some actual success.
Yeah, this is a great group of players that you're mentioning this weekend. Trevor Story is going to be so interesting in 2025 drafts because I think he's going to be a sleeper in the regards to, like you mentioned, he could be someone who goes 15-15, 20-20. He's done it before. We know the upside of Trevor Story. He was once a first-round pick, people are forgetting. Mm-hmm. So if you can get him somewhere in the 12th to 16th round range, depending on your league size, that's probably going to be a steal similar to Willy Adames this season. Because with that upside, and in a pretty decent Red Sox lineup, I mean, you have Tristan Casas, who's finally healthy again, Rafael Devers, of course, Jaron Duran, who has turned into a superstar. You've got Tyler O'Neill. I don't know if he's going to be there next year, but you have a pretty good Boston offense, and they have a good minor league system as well. So Trevor Story could be a problem, and in that hitter's park as well, I like his odds to be a sleeper for next season. Like, I'm going to be drafting a lot of Trevor Story. I actually just picked him up in my home league because I didn't know if O'Neill Cruz was going to be hurt the whole week, so I needed a shortstop replacement, and I picked up Trevor Story. So it's been working out pretty well, and I like Trevor Story a lot. I'm a big Story fan. I actually have a jersey of his because he technically won me a fantasy championship one year. So I'm a big fan of Trevor Story. Hopefully he could stay healthy. That's the big concern for him in 2025 especially. So we'll see what happens, but I definitely will ping Trevor Story as a sleeper for next season. And then Willy Adames, yeah, he's going to get drafted very high next season, I think. It obviously depends on where he goes. Like you mentioned, he's a free agent. So if he ends up in a good environment and a winning club with a good offense around him, I could see him going in the first 6 rounds easily. Like, he should be, right? Like, that's where he should be going. So Willy Adames is just a fantastic player. Very undervalued, like you mentioned. Completely agree on that. And then Riley Green, my hero, like I said, he pretty much was the reason why I made it to the championship in my home league, thanks to his 2 home runs on Sunday. I basically needed to out-homer my opponent by 2 on Sunday, and Riley Green were my only 2 home runs, and my opponent hit none. So it was a very good swing for me, and I love Riley Green. To me, Green is like a Juan Soto light, and that's the comp I kind of give him because his eye at the plate is fantastic. He's great in OBP leagues, which is what my home league is, of course, so very happy that I have Riley Green. And he's not going to hit like 40 home runs and steal 20 bases, but a 30 homer, 5 to 10 steals, 80 runs, 90 RBI, 350 to 380 OBP is very much likely in the realm of possibility. So Riley Green to me is like a Juan Soto light that you can get way, way later in your draft. Like, obviously you said he's a 20th best outfielder in Roto rankings at the moment. He obviously missed some time due to injury. So I think if he plays a full season, he could be like top 15 best outfielders, maybe even crack the top 10 if he stays fully healthy, like I said. So I think there's a lot of upside for Riley Green. And like you said, the Tigers have been surging. All that young potential is finally coming true. And the offense is kind of coming to life. So it's cool to see Riley Green exploding. And I am also very high on him for 2025. And then I just wanted to add on one thing from this past weekend. Like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, Hiliot Ramos did something that no one has ever done in baseball history at San Francisco Giant Stadium, which, what's the name of it? I always forget the new name. It's Oracle Park. So at Oracle Park, there is the McCovey Cove in right field, which basically outside of the stadium, there's a bunch of water. Obviously, if you are around my age, you've seen Barry Bonds dunk a bunch of balls into the water around that time. So the McCovey Cove is legendary, and there has never been a right-handed hitter that has hit a ball into McCovey Cove on a fly. And Heliot Ramos did that on his 21st home run on Roberto Clemente Day into McCovey Cove. No touching anything else, just right into the cove. First right-handed batter to ever do that, which I thought was awesome. The closest we've seen was actually Buster Posey during a playoff game where he hit one to right field and it bounced off that little, I don't know, pillar-looking thing and then went into McCovey Cove. He was just a hair shy of doing it. So it was really cool to see Ramos make history there.
Yeah. It was kind of funny, though, because it's like, really? No righty has ever done that. That's so surprising. But
yeah, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, but that park, Oracle Park now, I honestly, the way I think about baseball stadiums is what they were called like 5-10 years ago. But
same. That's why I never call a ballpark by its actual name, because I'll say the wrong one almost certainly.
Yeah. It's like, it's AT&T Park. No, it's actually Oracle Park.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's surprising that in its history that no one's ever... no right-hander has ever hit one into the park, right. into McCovey Cove. But again, that stadium is just so weirdly shaped I could see why just, you know, a lot of doubles from right-handers in that space.
Yeah, it's not a good dimensional park.
No, it really is not. All right, moving on to pitchers from the weekend. We're going to start with Edward Cabrera of the Miami Marlins, who went up against the Nationals, got a loss in this one, unfortunately. 6 innings, no one runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. There were 2 unearned runs in this start, which is why he ended up with a loss there. But that is 2 straight starts for Cabrera, who has shown that he can dominate against great teams like the Phillies and handle poor teams like the Nationals. Of course, we're going to cover this later, but he got absolutely smacked around by the Dodgers in today's start. But that's Edward Cabrera. He's an absolute cherry bomb. It's frustrating because there's so much talent for Cabrera with his stuff. And then at the same time, he's just susceptible to giving up runs in bunches. He's got a 4.55 ERA and a 1.33 whip on the season. Those numbers are obviously going up after today's start. Both of those are around the 35th percentile among qualified hitters. The 26% strike rate is just what gives us hope. He has an insanely high walk rate, which doesn't help him. But when he locates pitches really well, when he does the Blake Snell blueprint of, you know, fastballs up and then that disgusting like 95 mile an hour changeup at the bottom of the zone, it works out really well for him. But again, that lack of command just kind of makes him a cherry bomb. When he does limit those walks, though, Cabrera can stand with some of the best pitchers in the majors. On Saturday, Patrick Corbin of the Nationals went up against Miami, got the win in this one. 6 innings with 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts, and thus probably ends Corbin's period of fantasy relevance this season. In today's game against the Cubs, Thursday, he pitched 4.1 innings. He gave up 5 earned runs, and then now he gets the Royals. So if you hadn't dropped him already after that Miami win, you can definitely drop him now. His slider and his cutter were on point in this game on Saturday. They were getting whiffs, and his sinker was earning called strikes. The frustrating thing was that if you look back to his game against the Pirates, which is the previous start where he gave up 7 earned runs, that was also his strategy. He was getting whiffs on his breakers, he was getting called strikes on his sinker, but just was giving up a few too many hits on the cutter. So I'm not saying that this means that Corbin's unlucky, that he just has really elite stuff and just just unfortunately gives a bunch of runs. But he does have good enough stuff to succeed against poor teams. Now, obviously, I don't think he's got any great matchups for the rest of this year, so we'll have to maybe look to next season. He's still pretty much just a streamer, I think, in 2025. But you know, I think this is something to keep in mind that, again, most pitchers, they have a possibility of doing well, and most of it comes down to, you know, their strategy, how their stuff is looking. And Corbin has decent stuff. I'll be willing to say that, but for the rest of the season, at least, he does not have good enough stuff to stay on fantasy rosters. And then finally, Rene Blanco of the Houston Astros on Sunday went up against the Angels, got a win, 6 innings with no earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Among pitchers with 120 innings this season, Blanco ranks 8th in ERA and 19th in WHIP. This is all good enough for 23rd among all pitchers when you look at Roto rankings. His strikeout numbers just aren't ace level, which is probably going to hold him back. His walk rate is pretty high, too. But he has found a way to limit the hits this season, ranking the 96th percentile on hits per nine. that's of course why his whip is, you know, that good, despite the fact that he does, you know, tend to walk guys a little bit more. All that put together is 13 quality starts, which is pretty solid. The BABIP also has been incredibly low, though, 219 on the season. So there's a little bit of luck. He is a fly ball pitcher, so a lot of those fly balls are staying in the park, which is obviously a great thing for him. So it's hard to say how real the season is for Blanco, if this is going to be indication of what he looks like next year. But the Astros have clearly figured something out with him. I think they're going to stick with him and have him in their starting rotation next season as well. So, yeah, Blanco's been a nice little revelation for the Astros this year, for fantasy managers alike. Obviously, getting having two near no-hitters. Well, one no-hitter and then one near no-hitter is really good for your stats, for sure. But yeah, Blanco's been kind of an interesting pitcher this season. His stats have been real. I just don't know how real they're going to be come next year.
So this group of pitchers is extremely interesting because they couldn't be more unalike. Edward Cabrera is like the quintessential cherry bomb. We always expect him to take that next step, and he can because he has such nasty stuff, but his command has been so bad throughout his career that it's just not even fathomable that he'll ever be good. And that's maddening. And if he ever finds it and it all clicks, watch out, because he can be incredible. But I just don't see that happening anytime soon, because he puts together awesome starts, but then he'll just walk 9 batters and give up 6 earned runs. And you're like, I don't know what to do with this guy. So Edward Cabrera is a mystery. I hope he figures it out, because in a start like this against the Nationals, you can see what he's capable of, and it's pretty impressive. Patrick Corbin, I was shocked that he even had a stretch of fantasy relevance at all this season, and he really did. I mean, he was great in those starts for the past, like, month and a half.
Yeah.
So shout out to Patrick Corbin. If anyone picked him up and used him as a streamer at any point, I'm sure you're happy with what he gave you. He's obviously not doing great as of recent. His last start wasn't great. Gets the Royals next, like John said. I would avoid him, and I would drop him if you had him anywhere. But hey, what a run for Patrick Corbin. And then Ronel Blanco, he's been a mystery as well, because he kind of came out of nowhere, cracked the rotation, which no one really expected in spring training, then pitched a no-hitter almost immediately, and then almost had another one, and then was out of the rotation, and then back in the rotation. I'm not sure what to think of this guy and if he's going to be in the rotation moving forward next year. I'm assuming so, because they probably won't have Justin Verlander, and then they'll need someone to replace him, and I think they lose another pitcher as well. So Blanco's probably going to be in the rotation, and I think he could be a nice sleeper pitcher. I wouldn't count on him giving you the numbers that he's given you this season, because it just seems not repeatable, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The BABIP's really low, like you said. He's had a lot of good luck, but he's a good enough pitcher to be drafted in fantasy baseball, and I think he's going to be a good, like, SP4 or 5 if you can get him around that range.
Yeah, I think for him, it's just going to – is the thing is just – is his – are his skills going to stick, right? Because he's not getting guys out because of his strikeouts, right?
Right.
Like, they're decent, but they're not, like, ace level where he's getting, you know, more than a strikeout per inning. The thing I think in terms of job security for him is just the fact that Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, and Jose Urquidy all underwent Tommy John surgery this year.
Yep.
So Lance McCullers is also technically still in the organization, but
I forgot about him.
He's pretty much an afterthought at this point.
Yeah, totally honest.
And so, like you said, that kind of leaves a roster where if Justin Verlander comes back, which that's a big if, right, they have... I think Yusei Kikuchi is he's a free agent.
I am not 100% certain.
I believe, yeah, I think he's a free agent next year. And
They have Framber.
They've got Arrigetti.
Yep.
And Hunter Brown, right? So that's a really nice core of three.
Yep.
So that kind of leaves Ronel Blanco. We'll see if they keep Yusei Kikuchi, because they did pay a lot to get Kikuchi.
That's true.
And that trade. And then, yeah, we'll see if Verlander comes back. But it is kind of a tough thing. I mean, I shouldn't say with certainty he's going to make the rotation next year. But I just think everything's kind of pointing to the fact that they like him enough that they've kept him around this long. Right?
Yeah, true.
And they've kept him around this long despite the fact that Verlander has been reasonably healthy. No, not great, but, you know, healthy enough-ish. And that they've gone to a six-man instead. So, Yeah, I'm curious where he goes in drafts next year. I'll probably won't touch him, but he's definitely an intriguing person to look at in drafts.
He's someone I'm probably going to target in best ball drafts, like
yeah,
almost specifically in best ball drafts.
That makes
because
sense.
If he does crack the rotation, I'm sure he's going to be a late value player in drafts. So if I grab him in the 14th, 15th round, and then just leave him there and hopefully he pitches. And if he does, he's probably going to give me good stats by the end of the year. I'll take that. But I'm probably not going to draft him in many head-to-head leagues or roto leagues. But best ball leagues, I'll be interested. Moving on to Monday, September 16th. Thanks to Ryan Clark for the Dansby Swan Song Hitter Recap article. We'll start with Andrew Benintendi of the White Sox, who went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 3 RBI, and 2 walks. It's very clear that Benintendi is trying to play his way out of Chicago and onto a competitive team. Since August, Benintendi has actually been really, really good. Since August 1st, he's hit 11 of his 19 home runs, has 29 of his 60 RBI, and has a batting average of over .270. It sounds crazy, but if you need a hot bat, which I never thought I would say hot bat followed by a Chicago White Sox player, in those deeper five outfield leagues, or even just for the final stretch in roto leagues or head-to-head leagues, Benintendi is kind of worthy of being picked up. And I can't believe I'm recommending that. I think we've like trolled him the entire season almost. And now he's just playing fantastically. So shout out to Andrew Benintendi. I hope that you no longer call the White Sox your home anymore, because you're too good of a player to be on that team. So hopefully you find a new home in the winter. And then next we have Bobby Witt Jr. of the Royals, who went 2-for-4 with a home run, a run, 5 RBI, and a stolen base. Witt had a remarkable game here with a grand slam and a total of 5 RBI. He also made a little bit of history after Monday and Tuesday's games. On Monday, he became the third Royals player to record 200 hits in a season at age 24 or younger. And then after his stolen base in Tuesday's game, he is the first shortstop in MLB history to have multiple 30-30 seasons, which obviously means 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases. Obviously, the steals are down from last season where he had 49, but still, Bobby Witt is going to be a perennial top 5 pick in fantasy, and he's just an unbelievable player all around. So shout out to Bobby Witt making history, just incredible stuff.
Yeah, I talked about Benintendi on last week's pod, and he's doing even better, which is insane.
Yeah.
It is kind of tough, though. I think with his contract, I think he is still stuck in Chicago for the next 2 years. And I don't know, the fact that Chicago, I mean, it's, he didn't have any value at the trade deadline. So it makes sense why he didn't get traded. I could see Chicago trying to, you know, take advantage of this last 2 months and see if they could, they could get something for Benintendi. I think the challenge with him is like, is he essentially just selling out for power at this point? Right.
True. Cause
like the thing with Benintendi was like, he's a power speed average kind of guy. Right. He lost the power and the speed. He did keep the average. And then this year, he's kind of lost the average, lost the speed as well, and has just been going full power, at least for the last 2 months. And that still plays, right? At least it still plays in fantasy, right?
Yeah.
And his average isn't terrible, right? Like you said, since August 1st, it's been over 270, which is pretty solid, right? It's not like 300, but it is, it plays. And if he just has like a power average guy, that's a bat that kind of works in fantasy as like, you know, a deep five outfielder league. He's probably not worth a pickup in like, you know, 12 team three outfielder leagues with two utils. But in the scenario that you're talking about, yeah, Benintendi is like weirdly like a solid fantasy option, like not just for the next week, but like maybe even next year if this kind of continues on. And then, yeah, Bobby Witt's insane. I had written about 30-30 seasons on the Pitcherlist newsletter a couple of weeks ago about how actually kind of how rare they are and how multiple 30-30 seasons are super rare. So it's kind of insane that at this young, Bobby Witt already has 2 seasons, which is insane. So yeah, shout out to Witt for being incredible. And I hate the fact that I have to face him for like the next 10 years when the Royals come to town.
Yeah, that's rough. But yeah, to be the first shortstop in MLB history to have multiple 30-30 seasons,
yeah.
Let alone back-to-back seasons. You know, it's not like he did something good, then had a 30-30 season, then was good, mm-hmm. then had another 30-30 season. He's done it back-to-back now. So that is impressive in its own right. And yeah, they're not common to get just a 30-30 season, especially for shortstops, as we see here. So just impressive stuff out of Bobby Witt. He is going to be a force for the next few years, for sure. Moving on to pitchers from Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Andre Defiant, instead of Andre the Giant, of course, SP Roundup article. We start with the disappointment himself, Reed Detmers of the Angels, who went 5.1 innings pitched, 7 earned runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts against the White Sox. Womp, womp. Raise your hand if you too were burned and tricked and hoodwinked and befuddled by Reed Detmers. Maybe we can all call a lawyer and sue this guy or something. You can't tell since you're just listening to me speak, but my hand is very, very high up in the air. I streamed him almost everywhere, and man, did I get burned. This was supposed to be the most softball, easy, no-brainer matchup of the year, which set us up for the ultimate trap card. Somewhere Yugi is just kind of laughing at us for doing this. He allowed multiple home runs, his stuff didn't look great, and he was demolished. I mean, of course, after the guy just completely destroys the Dodgers and then has another good start, of course he folds to the White Sox, right? Surprisingly, though, he did rebound a little bit and make it through 5.1 innings pitched, and he ended up racking up 6 strikeouts because this start could have been a lot worse, I'll tell you. This could have been way worse, and that's scary to say, but he ended up making it a little bit better. It's still not great. It burned us, but the damage that he did to our ERA and our WHIP was just detrimental. It was not good. So Detmers will always be a headache, and I can't stress enough that I won't be falling for it again. He is on my specific do not pick up, do not target, do not look at, do not recommend list for the foreseeable future. Like, I'm sure he's going to have a great spring training. I'm going to be like, oh yeah, Reed Detmers, this is the year. Because every year it's that, but I'm so out on this guy that I just can't believe I fell for the trap in my championship week in multiple leagues. It's just so free of a trap card there. I mean, I should have known better. But hey, you live and you learn. We all get burned. If you are mad at any fantasy analyst for recommending Reed Detmers against the White Sox, then please just reflect on yourself, because we too were streaming him. We all follow our own advice as well. I hate when I see like, oh, this analyst told me to pick up this guy and he stunk. And then you're like, well, you didn't have to pick him up. You listened to the guy and you obviously value his opinion enough to think that he's smart, or smarter than you at least. So don't get mad when something like this, something so baseball, happens. So it happens. It just stinks. Moving on to Andre Pallante of the Cardinals, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the Pirates. This is the guy we all should have streamed instead of Detmers. I'm certainly regretting it. Now, Pallante has had some really good starts throughout the season, but this was a clear case of a decent pitcher going up against a terrible offense, one without O'Neill Cruz in it, by the way. He gets the Guardians next, and I probably wouldn't start him there. However, the Guardians did clinch the playoffs on Thursday, so they might not deploy all of their starters for this outing, so maybe, just maybe, he'll be worth using. So keep an eye on that if you picked him up, and you might want to use him again, but I probably wouldn't recommend using him. And then lastly, shout out to Shota Imanaga of the Cubs, who pitched a gem against the Athletics, going 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 11 strikeouts, with a golden goal in this one, 22 whiffs and a 38% CSW. Just absolute annihilation from Shota, who could very well be the NL Rookie of the Year if it wasn't for Paul Skenes and Jackson Merrill just being beasts.
Yeah, I think with Detmers, we've all fallen into that trap. I know I have. Thankfully, yep. I wasn't in any, like, you know, consequential fantasy baseball games to have started Detmers. So there is that. I will take that. I mean, just looking at this game for him, it kind of just came down to command, or technically control of where his pitches were, right? Like, a bunch of fastballs, not high in the zone, kind of in the middle of the zone, or way too high that they were uncompetitive. A bunch of sliders that just weren't down and away, you know, just a bunch of them in the zone, a bunch of them high in the zone. He's got that curveball, which is incredible, but when it doesn't really fall in the zone, this is kind of what's the point, right? His stuff could be good. His fastball's like really flat, but he's using it incorrectly. and I get it. Baseball is a very tough game, and it's easy for us to, you know, as much as, you know, we complain about guys who, you know, get mad at analysts about, you know, bad picks and things like that. It's easy for us to complain about a pitcher and be like, why can't you put the fastball up there? You know, something like that, you know?
Like, so true.
Like, I get it. But, like, you look back to that start against the Dodgers, like, it wasn't perfect by any means in terms of where he was locating the pitches. But there's a bit of a bigger cluster of sliders that are kind of just down and away, just outside the zone. The fastballs are a little bit located more kind of in the top of the zone, kind of, you know, bunched around. And then you look at this start against the White Sox, and it's just, like, all over the place. And it's, you know, easy to make the correlations. Like, well, he just didn't control his pitches well. That's why it sucked. But, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I think, like, what we want to see from Detmers is consistency and being able to put the pitches where they should be so that they're the most successful thing. And if he can't do that day in and day out, it just makes it really tough to trust him in fantasy.
Yeah, I'm not mad at Detmers, obviously. I'm mad at myself for trusting him. Yeah. You know, like, that's kind of what the correlation is. I mean, he should be good against the White Sox, especially after what we saw in the two starts previously.
Yep.
And that all indicates to one of the worst teams of all time to get dominated by this guy. But that's baseball. Sometimes the odd, crazy stuff happens and you just don't know what you're going to get.
Sometimes Andrew Benintendi hits two homers in a game.
Yeah, against the lefty, against Reed Detmers. I mean, I don't know, man. It's it's crazy. But we are going to take our last break, and when we come back, we will recap Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, as well as give some streamer recommendations for the final week. You won't want to miss it, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to get into Tuesday's performances. John, who did well on Tuesday?
Yeah, thanks to Mark Stumiger for the Chitty Chitty Lang Lang hitter recap article. And we are going to start with Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs, went 3-for-5 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Happ had an ADP in the 14th, 15th round, kind of in that area. And he's played his way into borderline outfielder one status. He's kind of on the edge of outfielder one, outfielder two, I think. He started out really slow in April. He only had 1 homer. He was batting .216. Which probably justified the fact that he was drafted that low. But after that, he's pretty much hit 5 homers each month between May and August. There's a little bit of a dip in September. He's got 3 now in September. But overall, this is his second season with 25 homers, and he's 1 steal away short of his career high of 14. He's at 13 right now. This will likely be his best season based on counting stats. He's either tied or ahead of where he was last year in terms of runs and RBI. He's 29, I believe, maybe 28. I can't remember exactly his age, but there's no reason to believe that he can't continue at this level next year. I believe he's returning with the Cubs. That team, even though it hasn't looked great, if everything's healthy, it could be another solid team next year. And Happ, I think, is really hitting his stride right now. And even though he's kind of been blamed for inconsistency in the past, he's showed a lot of consistency this year. Like, he's only had, I think, 3 or 4 two-homer games, and then kind of his success has been sprinkled out throughout the year instead of just, like, coming in bunches. It definitely felt like that way in the summer when he was, like, super hot, but he's maintained that for the entire year, which I think is cool to see. So we'll see if that kind of happens in 2025. I'm optimistic. I had Happ on my team as a really nice waiver wire pickup this year, and very appreciative of the fact that he decided to be really good this season. Next is Pete Alonso of the Mets, 3-for-5 with a double, a home run, 2 runs, and 5 RBI. In looking at Alonso, I was actually kind of surprised that first basemen in general just haven't done very well this season in terms of fantasy. The only first baseman in the top 10 batters in Roto rankings is Vladdy, and he frankly saved his season by remembering how to hit homers once June started. He was pretty terrible in the first 2 months, even though I really believed in him. It just did not look great, and then he finally turned it around and, like, looked like the Vlad that we all expected him to be. Alonso kind of was the opposite. He was really raking in April. He had 8 homers, 20 runs, 15 RBI. He slowed down a little bit since that month, but he's still been performing really well. I think he's had 5 homers in every month at least, or something like that. And obviously, as he's been doing well, the Mets have been doing well, so that's probably been helping his stats as well. So that consistency really helps him continue being a top tier first baseman. It just kind of means his stats haven't been as great as other batters throughout the entire year in Roto rankings. I think the big question for Alonso is where he's going to end up next season. Regardless of where he is, he's going to hit homers for sure. I'm sure you would probably like him to stay on the Mets. I don't think there's a team out there that's going to sign him that's going to put him in a bad situation. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see where Alonso ends up in free agency next year. And then, like you mentioned, Luis Angel Acuña, who of course is the brother of Ronald Acuña Jr., called up because of the Lindor injury. In his second game on Tuesday, he went 3-for-4 with a double, a homer, 3 runs, and 2 RBI, which is a pretty good game. His career numbers in the minors, though, aren't too pretty. He was just pretty much called up as because he's a shortstop and can play the position. Maybe being in the majors will help his game grow. He's been really solid throughout his first few games in the majors. It's just going to be interesting to see what the Mets decide to do with him, because obviously Lindor is at shortstop. Acuña is not going to be playing shortstop next season for the Mets for sure. But do they call him up as a utility guy, or do they keep him in the minors this season a little bit? Very interesting for him, but he clearly has a bat that can play. So good for him for having a really nice, solid debut to his major league career.
So a few things on this whole list. Ian Happ, first of all, is 30 years old. So that's
30. Okay.
Really young. I mean, I still consider that young, I hope, because I'm 31 turning 32. And if that's old, then I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm hoping that he's young. And the Cubs, yeah, they have a pretty strong core. And Ian Happ has been great for 2 seasons now. And honestly, the last 2 seasons are almost identical, this one and the last season.
Mm-hmm.
He hit 21 homers last season, 14 stolen bases, 84 RBI, 248 batting average, 360 OBP. Well, this year, 25 home runs, which is 4 more, and ties his career high. Then also has 85 RBI, which is 1 more, 13 steals, which is 1 less. 247 batting average, which he had a 248, and he's got a 344 OBP, which is slightly lower. So he's putting up identical seasons back to back. I wouldn't consider him an outfield one. Maybe in OBP leagues, he can kind of creep up to that, or points leagues, but he's one of the stronger outfield twos, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he does everything you want. He gets steals, he hits homers, he gets RBI, runs, decent average, great OBP. So he just does a little bit of everything and everything well. I think in 5 outfielder leagues, he's a set it and forget it outfield 2 or 3. I think in head-to-head leagues, you can confidently draft him as an outfield 2. I just like him as a player. I think he's very, very good. I would love if Pete Alonso re-signed with the Mets, and I truly think that's going to happen. I don't know if that's just me being an optimistic Mets fan or just knowing that we have Steve Cohen as our owner. I don't know which one it is, but I think the Mets are going to go extremely hard in the offseason, especially depending on how we do this year. Because if we make a deep playoff run and we're like one thing away from making the World Series next season, I think Steve Cohen's going to open up the checkbook and go all in next year, because he already stepped down as the lead of his hedge fund to focus on the Mets. So it would be hard for me to think that guy who just pretty much stopped doing his normal job to focus on doing his Mets job is just going to fold and let people walk. So I think we're going to try to get Soto. We're going to try to get Corbin Burns. We're going to try to get Pete Alonso. We're going to go for everybody. And it's just up to Pete if he wants to take the deal that we offer. He is a Boris client. And any Mets player that says, oh, I want to stay as a Met, and then has a Boris client, usually goes after the money and doesn't take any sort of a pay cut. So hopefully Pete, if he does mean that he wants to be a Met and be a Met for life, I want him to, because he can break so many Mets records that I would love to have that guy who's homegrown, who truly bleeds orange and blue and kind of embodies everything to do with New York. I would love for him to stay. I mean, would it suck to see him go? Absolutely. Would I be mad if we had Christian Walker instead? Not really, but I would love to see Pete stay. I love Pete, and I hope he is a New York Met for the rest of his career. Luis Angel Acuña, though, is a tough situation because, like you said, where's he going to play next season? And that's like the Mets' biggest issue, is that we have such a plethora of middle infielders. Like, we have Ronnie Mauricio, who's been hurt this whole season, that we're still waiting on to come back, and he could play second base or third base. We have Mark Vientos, who's obviously broken out at third base. We have Brett Beatty still, who could play third or second. We have Jeff McNeil, whose main position is second base. We have Jose Iglesias, who's mainly a second base and shortstop. We have Luis Angel Acuña, who's mainly a second base shortstop. I don't know where we're going to play all these guys. I think a few of them are going to leave. I think it's bad news for Jeff McNeil. I think it's bad news for Brett Beatty. I could see both of those guys getting moved for pitching help or depth or something. I think Jose Iglesias might get some sort of deal because of what he did this season. I think he deserves to get paid. But I think Angel Acuña is going to be like the starting second baseman, depending on Ronnie Mauricio's status. Like, I don't know what we're going to do. We can always move Vientos to DH if JD Martinez walks, and then put Luis Angel Acuña at second, and we could play Brett Beatty at third or Ronnie Mauricio at third. We could do a lot of things, but we are so deep in middle infielders that I don't know what to do because obviously Lindor's the shortstop forever. It's going to be tough. We'll see what they do. And then I wanted to give one last shout out for Tuesday's performances. Juan Soto hit a home run in this one, which gave him his 40th home run of the year, which is a career high for him. I think his previous high was 35, so impressive that he's hit 40 for the first time. And it was also his 200th home run in his career, so pretty cool stuff out of Juan Soto.
Yeah, and he's like 24.
Yeah, he is so young, and I had to bring him up because I mentioned Pete Alonso, Luis Angel Acuña, and then obviously future Met Juan Soto. So
yeah.
We'll see. I have to will it.
Yeah, I think this is one guy that Steinbrenner is willing to break the bank for, or at least.
That's the thing, man. It's going to be a bidding war, I believe, between the Mets and the Yankees, and it's just about where he wants to go and how much more Cohen's willing to give up.
Yeah, I would love to see him go back to the Nationals because of how hilarious that would be.
That would be very funny. Or if he went to the White Sox just for ha-ha-ha, you know?
Don't do that to me. I can't deal with Juan Soto and Bobby Witt Jr. in my division.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
All right. Anyways, on to pitching. Thanks to Nick for the Behind the Nate Ball SP Roundup article. We're going to start with Shane Baz at the Tampa Bay Rays. Going up against Boston. Got a win in this one. 7 innings, 2 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeout. Shane's 12-game stint this season has definitely shown some promise. He has a 3.21 ERA, a 1.11 whip. The weird thing has been his decrease in his strikeout rate. He's got a 20.6% K rate, which is down 4 or 5% from where it had been back in 2022. Granted, that was also on a 6-game sample size, so it is what it is. A big reason for that has pretty much been the lack of effectiveness on his slider. It only has 11% swing strike rate this year, compared to being in the mid-20s in his major league stints in 2021 and 2022. It is kind of his second or third best pitch, depending on, you know, if he switches between that and his curveball. So obviously, if you have a pitch that only is getting 11% swing and strike rate, it's just not going to be as effective, and that kind of limits Baz to be a two-pitch pitcher. If you can find that pitch again in the offseason, I think he's going to be pretty solid. You know, in terms of where he goes in drafts, it's kind of tough because you think that Shane Baz is kind of a lock to be a top 40 guy. And maybe with these stats, he is, right? That ERA and that whip are still really solid. The lack of strikeouts is unfortunate. And it maybe is a little hesitancy to put him in top 40. But at the same time, if somehow over the offseason he figures something out with the slider, we see something different in spring training, I think that is a good indication that he could be a really solid contributor next year. A guy who is a really good contributor this year, of course, is Cole Reagans of the Royals. Went up against Detroit. No decision in this one. 7 innings with 1 run, 4 hits, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Some of you might thought that the preseason hype was all smoke, but Reagans has shown that he is the real deal. The ratios have not exactly been ace level, but they've been all right. It's partially due to his high walk rate that's just causing a lot of issues with his whip. In this one, of course, we saw 4 hits and 4 walks, which isn't great. But his volume has been awesome. 180.1 innings on the season, which is impressive for a guy who's gone through 2 Tommy John surgeries, knock on wood. Reagans was around the 20th, 25th pitcher coming off the board in drafts based on ADP this year. Of course, if you had the misfortune of being in any drafts with any pitcher list related listeners or viewers of the site or just staff, Cole Reagans shot up the board, unfortunately. So it's maybe a little bit skewed in that remark, but yeah, I would still expect his stock to continue to rise next year, maybe top 10 pitchers. I mean, he's, in my opinion, probably the second best pitcher in the AL this season. Maybe he's the third. I don't know. But second, at least, you know, top 3 for sure. And I think with that type of season this season, that's just only going to, you know, push him up boards next year in 2025.
So for Shane Baz, I think that he's going to be very good next season. He's going to be very slept on. Like, I think he's going to go deep, deep, deep in drafts, and I think he's going to return so much value. And I know I'll say this now, and I'll forget about it, and I won't draft him, and I'll be mad because I know I said this, but Boz is going to be very good. I can't really comment more on the such, but he's going to be very good. I mean, he's shown promise. He's been very good throughout all the times that he's had that weren't injury starts. So I really like what I see out of Shane Boz, and I hope that he can have a healthy year next year. And then Cole Reagans is an absolute unit. I love this guy because I picked him up last year. He helped me win my fantasy baseball championship in my home league. He helped me win a lot of other leagues. I made a lot of money thanks to Cole Reagans. So very thankful for him. And then this year is just more of the same. I mean, he's gotten 20 quality starts, 180 innings pitched, like you said, 217 strikeouts. And his ERA and whip are really good. 3.24 ERA, 1.15 whip. Like, sure, you'd like that to be a little lower, sure, out of your ace. But those are perfectly fine numbers. So I love what Reagans has been able to do. I'm glad that I bought in on the hype last season. I was all in this season. Obviously, being a part of Pitcherless, like you joked, his hype was through the roof here. Like, Nick loved him. Nick did an interview with him as well, which made me love him even more because it was so insightful and he just got everything. Like, I don't know. I really like Cole Reagans. He's someone that's going to be an ace for years to come. He is legit. He's the real deal. And I'm excited to draft him yet again next year.
Yeah, like the ERA is still 17th among qualified pitchers, right? Like, you'll take that. It's not bad. It's just like, not, you know, three, but there's only, I looked at the stat, I was looking at the stats today, there's only five pitchers this year who have an ERA below three. So 3.24, we'll take that.
Yeah, that's really good. So shout out to Cole Reagans, you are awesome. Moving on to Wednesday's performances from September 18th. Thanks to Scott McDermott for the Story of My Life hitter recap article. We had a few players hit multiple home runs here on Wednesday. For me, it was a mixed bag because in my home league championship final, I roster one of these guys, but I'm facing the other two. So yay, but ouch. I don't know. It's been strange, but we'll start with Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 3 runs, 3 RBI, and a walk. This was the one that was on my team, and man, has Carroll been awesome lately. In this game, both of his 2 home runs, despite being at Coors Field, would have been no-doubters in all 30 parks. Since the All-Star break, Carroll has turned around his slug in a huge way. He had a .334 slugging percentage in the first half and a .617 in the second half. Carroll will be an interesting player in drafts next season because he obviously started out slow this season, but he's shown that he has first-round pick upside in the second half and with his entire season last year, of course. So I'm in the camp to believe that if he's there in the second or third round, I will draft Corbin Carroll. I don't think he's a first-round pick anymore just because of the immense quality of player that we're seeing nowadays. But Corbin Carroll can easily return first-round value in the second or third round, and I'll be all over him in those formats because I really think that he's the real deal. I think he's a 20-home run, 40 to 50 stolen base guy. Like, obviously the steals are a little bit down this year. The homers really caught up after he was terrible in the first half, but I think it was just a little bit of a sophomore slump and that shoulder was probably bothering him still going into the beginning of the year, but he's really figured it out. It's all clicked for him. And I just love Corbin Carroll. I love the way he plays the game. I love the player. Very excited about Carroll for the future. Then we have the next two guys who were the guys that homered against me twice in the same day. Not happy about it. Josh Naylor of the Guardians, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Naylor has had an incredible season this year, especially because he was drafted so late with an ADP around 120. In 144 games played, Naylor has a .245, .322, .467 slash line with 31 home runs, 105 RBI, 81 runs scored, and 6 stolen bases. His previous high in home runs was 20. In 2022. So this has been a huge breakout in terms of power for Naylor. If he can get the batting average up to around 260 or 270, Naylor could be in the discussion as a top 5 first baseman for fantasy. I like him. I think that I'll push him up my draft boards, but not too high. I don't want to give him everything for this one season that's so far an outlier. And then lastly, we have Manny Machado of the Padres, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Machado has had a pretty good year all around, and you wouldn't think so by the way people have been talking down about him all season. Like, when I was looking on Twitter and people were like, oh, Manny Machado's a bust, oh, he's a wash, I'll never draft Manny Machado again. I'm looking at Reddit, and people are like, no, Manny Machado, terrible. I looked at his stats. I was like, what's wrong with this guy? If he hits one more homer, he'll have his third straight 30-homer season. And he's already eclipsed 100 RBI for the third time in his last four seasons. Machado has even found another gear since the All-Star break, batting .299 with a .932 OPS and 16 home runs. To me, Machado is definitely a top five third baseman, probably top three. He's pretty much given you 30 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 75 runs, and 100 RBI with a .280 average, which is extremely difficult to complain about. So I'm not sure what people expect, but Machado has been phenomenal.
Yeah, Machado is one of those like really just boring guys, right? Like much like a set and forget, right?
Yep.
And looking at his stats, you know, like he's having pretty much as good of a season, if not better, than Rafael Devers, which is kind of weird to say, but he's got a better average. He has more homers, 29 to 28, so not that many more. Less runs, but way more RBI, six more steals than Devers has right now, a .279 average versus a .274 average, right? Like, this is why Machado is just like a top five guy, because it, literally, like you said, his stats for the last 3 years just haven't changed. You can expect this from him, and then you can worry about how you get speed at another position or something like that, you know? Machado is just, he's so consistent. And that usually means you don't get more from him, but it also means you don't get less from him, which I think is huge.
Yeah, and the thing about that, too, is that he does provide stolen bases. Like, he gets anywhere between 5 and 10 pretty much every season. So
yeah,
it's not like he's a zero in the category and you're just getting home runs based on how he does, but 30 home runs and 10 stolen bases is amazing at third base. You know, it's not Jose Ramirez, yeah, obviously, but he's the best third baseman there is. So yeah, I don't know what you would complain about. He's just a set-it-and-forget-it, really good, constant contributor for you.
Mm-hmm. And then with Naylor is super interesting because he's playing like a top five first baseman. But like you said, like it's only one season. Who really knows if this is going to be who he is for, you know, next year? I think it's interesting. I think he's still worth a pickup if he ends up dropping a draft, because like no one in their right mind is going to be picking Josh Naylor over Matt Olson, right?
Yeah.
Next season. Like that's just not going to happen, especially with Matt Olson kind of showing a little bit that he's kind of back.
Yep.
But you might, it's kind of like the Christian Walker conundrum, right?
Yep.
like you, this guy plays like a top five first baseman. You don't draft him as a top five first baseman though, right? And I think Naylor and Walker are both very interesting candidates next year as like not even sleeper, but like guys who go in the 6th to 8th range for first baseman off the board,
yep,
but could play like a top three first baseman. Yeah, Naylor this year has been great. It's sucked for me because, of course, these two home runs came against the Twins. Yeah, he's been really good in kind of being more than just like a guy who hits for average. He's now got the power, which is kind of scary. And he's still pretty young. Not a big fan of that. And then Corbin Carroll, we've talked about him almost every week on this pod about, you know, where does he go in drafts next season, yada, yada, yada. So I'll leave that conversation to the offseason. But yeah, this turnaround for him, this second half of the season has been incredible. And it's a good thing to see that you just shouldn't really give up on guys when they're that young.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, for everyone that drafted him in the first round this year and was like, oh my God, Carroll's the hugest bust. He's terrible. This is bad. Look what he's doing when it matters the most. Like, obviously, he might have kept you out of the finals or the playoffs because of how poor he did for the first few months. But if you made it with him struggling, he is paying off dividends right now, and I couldn't thank him enough because he really was quintessential to me making the playoffs in most of my leagues and for being in the championship. So by all means, Corbin Carroll is awesome in my heart. And then, yeah, Josh Naylor, like you said, I don't think I would draft him anywhere over like Matt Olson, Vlad, Pete Alonso, you know, Bryce Harper, that group.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where the value is at first base. Like, if I miss out on those four big names that I mentioned, once again, I always forget some names because I always leave a big guy out. Freddie Freeman, like, I just forgot him completely. But those five guys, I'm not really going to take these two guys, Naylor and Christian Walker, over those five. But if they go, like, five rounds later or four rounds later, I'm all in on them if I miss out on those five big guys. So I like that value at first base. Like, they're two really good values in drafts, I think, going forward. So I like Josh Naylor and Christian Walker a whole lot. Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Junisipal Bonds SP Roundup article, we'll start with Ryan Pepiot of the Rays, who went 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, no walks, and 12 strikeouts against the Red Sox. Sheesh, man, don't I feel dumb? Well, not really, but I ultimately chose to drop Pepiot after his start against the Orioles because I heard that he was going to be limited. He only went 2 innings against the Guardians his last time out, of course, which made me feel smart, but this one, yeah, this one hurts. I mean, Pepiot was insanely efficient, throwing only 76 pitches to strike out 12 in 6 innings, so that's crazy, and he even pitched an immaculate inning in this one, which is ridiculous, and if you don't know what that is, that means that he struck out 3 batters, went 1-2-3 on 9 pitches. So he struck out 3 people, bam, 3 strikes, you're out, 3 strikes, you're out, 3 strikes, you're out, incredible. So 23 whiffs and a 41% CSW for a golden goal in this one, just insane, and man, Pepiot is going to be all over my radar in 2025 drafts. This guy can be really, really good. And then we have Cody Bradford of the Rangers, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 5 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts against the Blue Jays. What a bounce back from Bradford. In his last start against the Diamondbacks, he put up a clunker. But against the Blue Jays, he went back to his dominating ways. Unfortunately, in this start, the four-seamer was located poorly, but the Blue Jays still couldn't do anything with it. Bradford gets the Athletics next, and that should be a full steam ahead type of start. Just hope that his command is a little bit better in that one. And then lastly, shout out to Dylan Cease of the Padres, who went 8.1 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Astros. Just an unbelievable performance from Cease, and he's just been great all year.
I've talked on this podcast plenty of times how I'm a big Cody Bradford guy this season, how those first like 5 starts in May really convinced me, and then he was just out for the rest of the season. So it's nice to see him come back and do, you know, pretty well for most of his starts. Pepiot, I think, is, like you said, just a guy to really look at in drafts next season. I really like what the Rays have done for him. It is kind of interesting that Tyler Glasnow is out for injury and Pepiot is pitching. And the Dodgers could really use some healthy arms right now. So that all being said, I mean, I get why they did the trade. But Pepiot's been really solid. I think he's only going to get better next season. And he's going to be a guy I'm definitely looking at in drafts.
Without a doubt.
All right, moving on to Thursday. Let's just get started with Shohei Ohtani. 6 for 6, 4 runs, 3 homers, 10 RBIs, 2 stolen bases. This man is a monster. This was the game that got him to not just 50-50, but 51-51, which is insane. In case you're wondering, the record for RBI in a game is 12 RBIs, so he was too shy of that. He was the 16th player to hit 10 RBIs in a game. That record, of course, is held by two guys who I've never heard of, Mark White and Jim Bottomley, both oddly of the St. Louis Cardinals. So I don't know how that happened. But the real history that's being created, of course, was Shohei Ohtani becoming the first member of the 50-50 club and then the first member of the 51-51 club because he had to just kind of humiliate the Marlins just a little bit more. It was pretty impressive. He stole third in the first inning to join the 50 steals club. And then I was watching this as it happened, actually. He joined the 50 homer club with just a no doubter off Mike Bauman. Sorry, that's the answer to a trivia question in the future. But it was just kind of a fat changeup in not exactly the middle of the zone, but kind of just right where Shohei could take it for a ride out to left field. And of course, then to add to the hilarity, after he hit a homer in the 7th inning, I was busy, so I turned off the game. I didn't realize he came back in the 9th inning and hit another homer, which is just the funniest thing. And of course, the Dodgers end up winning 20-4, which, like, of course, it's against the Marlins. Like, he just took advantage of this really terrible matchup and just went absolutely crazy and was able to kind of get this insane milestone. And there's still a week of baseball left, so he could push those stats even higher, which is insane. Anyways, back to reality. We are going to talk about Matt Olson of Atlanta. 2-for-4 with 3 runs, 2 homers, 4 RBI, and 1 walk. Olson continued his march towards another 30-homer season, had a 106.7-mile-an-hour homer in the second inning, and then a 103-mile-an-hour one in the fifth. This brings him to 28 on the season and 94 RBI, which is certainly respectable, but it's not what most fantasy managers were hoping for when you drafted him in the first round this year. In September, even with the lack of power, he's been batting over 300, which is kind of nice. I do expect Olson to get back to being the hitter we know him to be next season. And on a healthy Atlanta team next year, where, you know, Acuna is coming back, Albies is hopefully at 100%, Austin Riley will be back, that squad will be incredibly scary. And if Olson is just honestly the same player that he was the last 2 months, he's going to be really, really good.
So I will start with Shohei Ohtani. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he obviously was the creator and first member of the 50 home run, 50 steals club. Just ridiculous. Something we've never thought we would see before. Like, it wasn't even a question. Like, people getting a 40-40 was remarkable, right? Like, that was the chase factor. That's what Ronald Acuna was saying and Juan Soto was saying, and all these players were like, I want to join the 40-40 club. And last year Acuna goes 40-70 and we're like, oh my god, that's incredible. And then Ohtani goes 50-50. What in the world? Like, this is something that doesn't happen, people. Like, I want people to understand that this is something that you will not see maybe ever again. Like, we can't be certain that there will be another member of a 50-50 club, right? Like, I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think we'll see another player for a long time that can go 50-50. It's just so hard, and Ohtani made it look stupid easy with a week to go.
Yeah.
He's got 51-51. I mean, can he go 60-60?
When he reached the 40-40 club, like we were talking about this, he was on pace to have 50-50 or 50... He was on pace to reach 50-50 basically like by the second to last game of the season.
Yeah.
Like on pace, right? Like assuming he just kind of keeps his pace going. And then he was like, no, I think I'm just going to crank up the intensity and get there like within a week, with a week to spare.
Yeah, it's just stupid. And I mean, the last home run that he hit, the one in the ninth when you turned off the game, I don't know if you saw what happened, but the Marlins were down, I don't know, 14-3, and they brought in a position player to pitch.
Yeah.
And it was Vidal Brujan, and Ohtani hit one. I swear to God, John, it still hasn't landed. It is the furthest ball I've ever seen hit. They said it was 450, which is a total lie. I think they flipped the numbers. It was 540 because it landed in the upper deck, 3 rows from the final row. Like, it was so stupid. But, and I was mad about that, by the way. That's a separate rant that I could go on, because I'm versing Max Muncy in my league in the championship.
Oh, sure.
And Vidal Brujan hits him with a pitch. He scores a run. Then he comes up again, gets an RBI, scores a run. Like, enough. What's with the position player thing? Anyways, I'm not going to get into that rant. But what Ohtani is doing is unbelievable. Everyone should just stop and revel at the greatest player of all time to ever play the sport of baseball, because what he's doing is stuff that cannot be replicated, and you really just got to admire what he's doing because it is so impressive. And this might single-handedly be the best stat line for one single player in a fantasy day of all time. I don't think anyone's had a better day than this.
It's, I mean, 3 homers.
Like, I know players have hit 4 home runs maybe back in the day when that was, like, a rare feat. Like, obviously, 4 home runs in a game is still one of the rarest feats in baseball. But for fantasy purposes, like, I don't think fantasy was as big as it is now back then. So, like, a lot of people probably missed out on 4 home runs.
Sure.
But 3 home runs, 2 steals, 10 RBI, 4 runs, and 6-for-6, a perfect 6-for-6 at the plate. I don't see many fantasy days beating this one.
Yeah, in terms of maybe, like, the last 15-20 years.
Yeah, I mean, Acuna probably did something where he hit 2 home runs and stole 4 bases in a game or something like that, which is incredible. Yeah. But I mean, 4 runs, 3 homers, 10 RBI, and 2 steals is ridiculous going 6-for-6. So one of the best days I've ever seen. And then one last comment on Matt Olson before we move on to pitchers and wrap this thing up is Matt Olson, I think if he drops in value at all in drafts in 2025, I will jump all over him, because this is truly a lost year for the Braves, which is crazy to say, because even in a lost year, they're competing for a wild card spot.
Right.
they've had all the worst fortune. They lost their ace pitcher. They lost one of the best players in baseball in Acuna. They've had a lot of misfortune. Albies went down. They had Austin Riley go down. You had Michael Harris go down. You've lost pitchers. I mean, they have had a nightmare of a season, even though they had the Cy Young winner, most likely, on their team in Chris Sale. They have Matt Olson, who's still a great player. They've been struggling, and I think that next year the Braves are going to go absolutely crazy, and Olson will be a huge value pick. If he goes in the third or fourth round next year, I think everyone should jump on that, because you can't expect 50 home runs, but you can expect 40 and a lot more RBI when everyone's healthy.
Honestly, if he's available at the end of the second round, I'm picking him up.
I agree. I will take him. And if he's in the third round,
I don't think
round,
he should get
I'm
to the third.
I agree. Yeah, I don't think so either.
He should not get to the third round. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And Shohei Ohtani should go number one overall next
year. Yeah, especially pitching for him in your league. Like,
Yeah. His steal numbers are going to go down next season for sure. But and his homers are going to go down next year for sure. But then, if you're in one of those leagues, usually ESPN, I think Yahoo is kind of the two Ohtani's league. But if he's only one Ohtani, you know, like, there's some merit for him to be a top five pick, or a top three pick, I should say. All right, pitchers. After all the hitting, yeah, there still was some good pitching performances as well. Zach Littell, the Tampa Bay Rays, going against Boston, got a win, 7 innings, 1 hit, no one runs, 7 strikeouts. I'm actually pleasantly surprised that Littell has managed to stay in the Tampa Bay rotation the entire season. He has not been very consistent, with only 10 quality starts in 28. And his season ratios aren't great either, with a 3.73 ERA and a 1.29 whip. I fully expected him to be kicked out of the rotation a couple weeks ago so that the Rays could bring up, I think it was Shane Baz.
Yeah, to get called up after injury, yep.
After injury, yeah. So more than a couple weeks ago, probably a couple months ago. But yeah, he's stayed on the roster and he's been decent. He's still, in terms of fantasy talk, you know, a guy who you stream rather than a pitcher you would keep on your roster. And next year it's going to be interesting because Tampa Bay is getting a lot of guys back in the rotation next season. As you mentioned at the top of the show, right? The reason Littell's staying is because Springs is hurt. Drew Rasmussen's still not really pitching full games. He's still kind of being used as an opener slash reliever kind of guy. But assuming they get back everyone healthy, Shane McClanahan, Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen, right? That's more people that need to be part of the rotation. And then this is a rotation that already includes Taj Bradley, Shane Baz. I just don't think Littell's going to be a starter next season. And so, I don't know. It's not like you were necessarily targeting him in drafts anyways, but it's nice to see him do at least a little bit of work here, especially because the whole, you know, conversion from reliever thing last season, it's actually worked out for him. And yeah, good for him. And hopefully he gets to, stay with the Rays organization if they believe in him. I don't know what they're going to have him as, maybe a reliever, but if he goes up to another organization, he could be a pretty solid starter in that situation. Brandon Pfaadt is the other pitcher we're going to talk about. Going up against Milwaukee, got a win in this one. 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, no walks, and 12 strikeouts. Pfaadt wasn't really able to build on his success in the postseason last year. He did improve his ERA and whip this season, bringing those ratios down to 4.81 and 1.27, but you can kind of see, based on how high those numbers are, how bad he was last year. He does have 13 quality starts in 30 opportunities, so it hasn't been all terrible, but his second half of the season has not been pretty. Since July, he's got a 5.65 ERA, just a bunch of games where he's giving up a lot of runs. And his fastball in this one, the reason why he was succeeded, had 14 whips and 13 called strikes. That's a 64% CSW. The problem, of course, was that his other secondary pitches weren't really that great, so he was kind of relying on this fastball to do all the work. He also took advantage of the Brewers, who were probably dealing with a hangover after clinching the NA Central title the day before. Trot out a very non-threatening lineup, had like 3 or 4 guys who were consistently on their major league roster, and then the rest were kind of just triple-A dudes. So very soft lineup for Pfaadt to deal with, but he took full advantage, and you know, you play against the teams that you face, and it worked for him. He is steadily improving, so Pfaadt is kind of interesting for next year. I still don't think he's a guy that you would keep on your roster. Maybe like a SP5, maybe he has that kind of staying power, but Yeah, I mean, at least we're seeing improvement, which is good. And maybe he can build on that in this offseason. And maybe he turns on the Jets again in the postseason, playing for the Diamondbacks, and maybe that leads to more success next year.
So just two quick things. Littell, good pitcher this season. Not sure if he'll be in a rotation, but he should be. I mean, genuinely, he's been a great pitcher for the Rays, so I don't know why they wouldn't keep him in there. I know they have a lot of other options, and McClanahan and Pepio and Boz, and they have a lot of good guys in that stable over there in Tampa Bay, but I think Littell deserves a shot and should be a pitcher for next season. If he is, I like him a lot in those best ball formats and in those deeper leagues.
Yeah.
I will draft a lot of shares of him. And then Brandon Pfaadt, he is so maddening because he'll do an absolute stinker of a performance and then dominate like this. But like you said, this was like a hangover game for the Brewers. You know, like they clinched and they just threw out whoever was not drunk. You know, like that's exactly what they did. And Brandon Pfaadt carved him up as expected because it was not a good lineup. And I should have known that, and I should have just streamed him because he was available in one of my leagues. Shame on me. That was stupid of my part. But still, Pfaadt can be very good. He just needs to fix a few things. Command-wise, he needs to not walk a lot of players, and he just needs to get that control intact so that he can command his very, very good pitches. Like, he's got a lot of good movement on his stuff. But if he can't control it, it leads to walks, it leads to runs, and he just gets blown up. So if he can just tweak that command a little bit and work on that, he's going to be very good. But that wraps up all of the performances from this past week. There was a lot, and we talked through a lot of stuff, and there was a lot of good things to be said. But it's time to move on to the streamers for next week. We have three pitcher recommendations. John, who do you recommend for streaming?
Yeah, last streaming recommendations of the year, because obviously the season ends next week. But we are going to start with Rhys Olson, 23% rostered on Yahoo, 9% on ESPN. Olson has dropped back to streaming territory after a spurt of some rough starts and appearance on the injured list. But he is scheduled for a start with the White Sox next week. Now, as we just demonstrated with Reed Detmers, that is not a lock for a good start. It's worked out for everyone, though, except for Reed Detmers. So maybe Detmers was the outlier. I would keep track of what Olson's pitch count is at, considering the fact that the Tigers will likely be still fighting for a playoff spot. If there's any news of him being limited at 60, then maybe don't go for this. But they say he's going to go 80. I would definitely start this because I think he's going to go five innings and then probably get a win. Just because the Tigers are annoyingly good this month. Another AL Central pitcher we mentioned last week, Joey Cantillo, 13% on Yahoo, 4% on ESPN. He gets featured for the second week in a row thanks to his high strikeout rate. He had a decent game against the Twins today, although he did walk three guys. He gets Cincinnati and Cleveland in the battle for Ohio next week. And with Cleveland still pushing to get home field advantage along the path to the ALCS, I don't really expect them to take the last week off. And then finally, we've talked about him a bunch, Edward Cabrera, 24% on Yahoo, 8% on ESPN. He was unfortunately the starting pitcher in today's game against the Dodgers. So, that's Edward Cabrera for you. But yeah, when you're in the way of history, nothing is going to allow you to pitch well. And the Dodgers took full advantage. He gets Minnesota next week. And considering that they've just been terrible at the plate the past few weeks and they love striking out, that's kind of reared its ugly head recently. This could be a solid day if you're hunting for strikeouts. It's still a risky thing because it's Cabrera, but the Twins have been kind of getting in their own way for the past couple of weeks. And so if you need a pitcher who's got good stuff, who could take advantage of it, I think Cabrera is an option there.
I will keep this short and sweet. I would rank them Edward Cabrera 1, Rhys Olson 2, Joey Cantillo 3. And that's because I like Edward Cabrera's strikeout upside, especially if you're chasing strikeouts at the end of roto leagues and head-to-head. I like that play. Rhys Olson, like John mentioned, could be restricted on pitches, and if he has one bad inning, it might not lead to a win or a quality start, but the White Sox are the White Sox, and anything can happen. And then Cantillo's been very good, but it's a little bit of a scarier matchup against the Reds. So I like all three of those options, but I would rank them Cabrera, Olson, Cantillo. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. It might be the last time that you can send us a question about fantasy baseball because the season is coming to an end. So make sure you do so. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnCuh. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. Make sure you follow this show or subscribe to the show on any of those platforms, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.